Hello and welcome to Medi-Call episode 194. I'm Corey and here's Daryl.
Yo.
Welcome back. We have a hell of a lot of stuff happening in Magic these days. It is the beginning of the summer, so like I think this is the season of just like getting all of the damn spoilers you could ever want. Like, too much to keep up with is really kind of what I remember of last summer, and I think we're in for more of that same thing. Because here we are, we got M21 coming out, we got previews happening already, there's like a wealth of Secret Lair products that just got released, we've got all these supplemental products going on, it's just a lot of shit, and you can't even play Paper Magic right now. It's nuts.
Yeah, that's the part that is insane to me, is like we can acquire these cards from the internet, but like we can't use them, so like why am I interested in purchasing them?
Yeah. Well, they are going to affect the digital game, obviously.
Yes, they are.
There are a ton of modern cards in this core set.
Yeah.
I think there's some really significant adds to modern. I think we'll get to that today. Of course, we'll do our spoiler game as the rest of the set gets spoiled. And then we will tabulate our points from the last set, which seemed like just yesterday. But I have to confess, I did not yet do that. So next time we cast, I'll have that information.
But oh, good.
Today we'll talk a little bit about M21. I got a little bit of a discussion to have with you about that. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this like conceptual direction of the game and kind of
sure.
how that's affecting play. But before we do, ManaTraders.com is our wonderful sponsor. Use the promo code ModernMetaCall, all one word, no hyphens, for 14% off your first 3 months at checkout.
Boom.
All right. So, Daryl, have you played any modern since since the changing of the companion mechanic?
I have not. Okay. I have to be honest.
I have not played a ton myself, but I would say looking at the results as they're getting posted now, it seems that it's just kind of bounced back to a healthy environment.
Cool.
We're seeing a lot of the stuff that was good beforehand. Some companions are still getting played. I'm seeing like Obosh Jund Luka got 10th at the preliminary online event. Aside from that, there's like some Yorion decks out there. There's definitely some Lurrus still floating around. But for the most part, things are not dominated by companion, which is great.
Good. Yeah, exactly what we wanted.
Yeah, the Bant Snowblade deck is bouncing back as one of the biggest players in the format. We're seeing humans make a resurgence. Humans was pretty oppressed by a lot of the burn stuff going on lately.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, just about every other modern deck is rearing its head again, ugly or not. I say that because I'm thinking about Tron when I mention that. Mono Green Tron is back.
Oh my god, no, please.
So then there's also Pioneer. Pioneer has still been seeing a lot of Dimir Inverter. Now after the ban, Dimir Inverter's back and better than ever. I think the last the challenge event had three of those decks in the top eight. I don't know if I have specifics on that, unfortunately, but
Reinvert is
big. But after these changes to Historic, people were really largely thinking that Winota was still completely busted. And I think they were right, because WotC acknowledged that today and said that Winota in the Historic format has been put on the suspended list, which is basically like it's a banned list, basically.
Going to the bench.
Yeah. So that was based on significant overrepresentation for Naya Winota. The standard version did Winota shenanigans into Agent of Treachery. The Naya version was just an aggressive version in Historic that went to Angrath's Marauders.
Yeah, I was saying it's like the double damage pirate.
Yeah, double damage pirate, which is also a human, which notably is how you get to attack with it.
Yep.
Or how we get to put in play, I should say. Yeah, cards like Winota, like with, you know, being 4 mana, doesn't have an ETB effect, but really kind of does because it can do something the turn it comes into play. That's a pretty significant effect when you've got stuff like Gilded Goose and Llanowar Elves to, you know, just throw into your opponent's attack zone in order to, you know, flip some Haxos, the Unscards, or Angrath's Marauders.
Is Goblin Rabblemaster in... Historic?
They play Legion Warboss in this deck.
So yeah, I would say something that has like a hasty token seems like a thing to be concerned about. So yeah.
So there you have it. So that one is suspended. Have you played much Historic? I know we've talked briefly about
I've
that
played
in the past.
Zero Historic. I
oh,
don't even,
boy.
Arena is not even on my client, on my
oh,
computer.
man. I'm having a lot of fun with Historic. There's a lot of cool stuff. There's a very neat Tempered Steel deck because you've got like some really excellent affinity tools in Historic. In well, Stone Cold Serpent is one for sure, but what's the name? Steel Overseer is very, very strong in the deck. There's also All That Glitters and Tempered
Okay.
Steel, so there's just tons of payoffs for Artifact Tribal.
Yeah.
And then what else we have? Gruul Historic. Gruul Aggro is really powerful. You see a lot of that. Basically the Gruul Spellbreaker, Questing Beast strategy.
Yep.
Lots of hasty creatures. Mono Black Devotion, Gary, and our best friend Phyrexian Obliterator. Big players there. There's a
Yes.
lot of good
Huge
mono
fan.
black stuff. And then of course there are some control decks including anything that has to do with Field of the Dead, Maze's End, Field of the Dead strategies, Bant Field strategies, Humans, Flash, Burn. It's pretty fun. I think
Good
there's still
stuff.
some room to grow with it and some bans to happen, but for the most part, it's seemingly pretty healthy right now without any really pushed efforts to break the format via tournament, payouts and things like that.
Yeah.
So, anyways, okay, so what I want to talk about today is M21 because we've got spoilers for that. So, Daryl, I think you like to use Scryfall, is that correct?
I actually use Mythic Spoiler.
Oh, Mr. Spoiler. Okay, well, I've got Scryfall pulled up, but roughly we're looking at the same set of cards here. There's
Yeah, I think so.
one in particular that I really want to focus on that just was spoiled. I think it was this morning. And I think that this has like kind of pushed some buttons for me on a topic that I've been really kind of concerned about with Magic. Mostly, I'm feeling this in the standard format.
Okay.
And I think it has to do with mana costs. But when you're playing a game of standard Magic on MTG Arena, many of which are best of one formats, you often
Sure.
have a lot of your luck placed in the opening hand. And what I mean by that is it's even more impactful when your opponent gets a free eighth card in their commander. So that's been changed, right? But if you in standard or probably even Pioneer for that matter, if you miss a land drop or stumble on a turn where your tempo is just kind of off kilter, you're not able to play a three drop, and your opponent plays a three drop such as like Teferi, Time Raveler, the cards that are being printed these days are so packed with value that if you miss an opportunity to match your opponent's value, you're pretty much dead on the spot. And I know that seems damning, and I know that seems like a generalization, but I want to use this new card that's come out as a spoiler today, Elder Gargaroth. It's a mythic and it's green. This is my example of that.
Okay, yep, I found it.
So Elder Gargaroth is three green for a beast. It is a 6/6. All right, power creep is real. It has vigilance, reach, and trample. And it says whenever it attacks or blocks, choose one. Create a 3/3 green beast creature token. You gain three life, or you draw a card. So I'm hearing a lot of people say, like, okay, this card's not even really going to see play. It doesn't have an ETB effect. It doesn't have haste. I don't know what world we're living in where this card doesn't see play. This is so much value. It does so much for you. Yes, it can be bounced by a Teferi Time Raveler, but on five, I think you're taxing your opponent's removal pretty heavily to the point where something like this can just take over the game if it is not matched with a response or if your opponent stumbles to do something on their own turn five. What do you think of this guy?
Yeah. I mean, this guy's kind of insane. So I'm trying to learn how to utilize Scryfall for something here real quick.
Okay.
Because I want to search for specifically 5 mana 6/6s.
Yeah. That's me.
So 5 mana 6/6s for like 3xx. We have stuff like Hunted Dragon, which is a 6/6 haste that gave your opponent 3/2/2 white knights. We have Orc, which can attack unless the defending player controlled an untapped creature of power 3 or greater and can't block power creatures of power 3 or greater. Soulforger Orc, which comes to play and you lose all but one life. And then when it dies, you gain life equal to the life lost when it came into play. And other various absolutely terrible creatures. So the best one of these creatures that has an old border, which is kind of what I want to comment on, is Spiritmonger. which is a three green black for 6/6 beast. Whenever it deals damage to a creature, put a counter on it. Regenerate it for a black. Change its color for a green. That's the best one. That was the only one with no drawbacks. No bad things.
That one was that card very was good very in its good. Time.
Yeah, it dominated standard. And so this is a 5-mana 6/6 that doesn't have regenerate, but like provides you almost anything you could possibly ask for on attacks and blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And it has vigilance. I mean, that's just a really good, you know, people would call this French vanilla because it's got a bunch of keywords and it like doesn't have an ETB, so it's just kind of like a vanilla beater. But like, this is non-zero amount of value. It like basically tells your opponent they can't attack on the spot, and then like unless they have a removal spell for it, and then it generates you value when you attack.
Yeah.
And it even shuts down evasion out of flyers. You have to have, like, unblockable or pro-green or something like that.
Yeah, my thought is, like, this fits into a lot of the same decks that, like, Questing Beast fits in, right? And Questing Beast is one of those cards that demands removal. However, it doesn't really provide advantage in the sense that you're getting more stuff that your opponent has to deal with. It provides advantage in the sense that it can not only damage your opponent's life total, but also kill their planeswalkers.
Yep.
This, on the other hand, if it blocks and gives you a 3/3, if it blocks and starts drawing you cards, it's just like the value and the advantage it provides is so hard to keep up with that it sucks to like have to spend your turn casting a, you know, 1-for-1 removal spell when your opponent is playing a big green deck and they're just likely going to play something more awful on the next turn.
Another big dumb green thing. Yeah.
So I think like, The problem I'm seeing here and the trend that I'm concerned about is that the power creep is just getting out of hand. Like, we're trying to, like, appease the players who are playing formats like Commander and, like, Brawl, where games go long and you can do big, powerful things and it's exciting. So then Standard has to keep up with it and the other constructive formats have to keep up with it. And so this is a big, powerful thing, but it only costs 5 mana. It's, like, such a cheap payoff that it doesn't really make you think about like what you do in the meantime, because this guy can recoup the life you lost in the early turns. This guy can take advantage if you have drained your opponent of their card in their cards by playing other creatures prior to it. It does so much.
Okay. I mean, you have to print cards that are going to make people want to buy packs.
I know, but where does it stop? Like, we're just going to continuously push this FIRE scheme that WotC is using to sell packs. It's kind of putting us in this sort of path to invalidating all of the previous cards that have ever been printed, right?
I mean, this is a discussion for another podcast, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
That I'm certainly willing to have, because I definitely used to play and was invested in the Yu-Gi-Oh! Scene for a long time. And Yu-Gi-Oh! Did something very good that Magic doesn't do. And then Yu-Gi-Oh!'s power creep just kind of spiraled out of control. So, like, both of those things have happened. And Yu-Gi-Oh! Manages it with a really weird ban list and stuff like that. So it's like, we can talk about that in another podcast.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting discussion.
We'll save it. But the crazy thing about it, though, is I'm not even terribly concerned about this specific card for Standard. Like, I don't think that this single card is going to be, like, the face of Standard. I think it's going to be one of many pieces in the format that seems really, really powerful and hard to deal with and frustrating when your opponent casts. But it's absolutely not the best card in the set.
No, I mean, it's not even really that hard to deal with. It's just kind of a big vanilla 6/6. Any Doomblade kills this thing, but you have to have a Doomblade for it. Like, it necessitates an answer. This is kind of a part of the philosophy of there are no wrong questions, there are only wrong answers.
Yeah. There is, historically, the other best French vanilla creature at 5 mana is also in the set in Baneslayer Angel.
Can't even kill this thing. Can't even attack past it. Just stonewalled by this big dumb 6/6.
Yeah.
Because it has reach for no reason.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right. Well, when it comes to Modern, I alluded to some cards that I think are really going to impact Modern. I think there's one poster child of that in M21 right now. And
I have a guess for it, but I'm going to let you go ahead. And I have what I think it is pulled up in a tab.
Okay, go ahead.
So is it Angelic Ascension?
Well, no, it's not. But that's definitely one we can talk about.
All right, you maybe haven't
seen this card as a spoiler if you don't know what I'm talking about, because Containment Priest has been
I knew that was a thing, but like I just like glanced over because like so Containment Priest is just like a card I knew needed to be in Modern,
yeah,
and needed to be reprinted, and so like I actually knew this was a spoiler, and it's just like good, like when we were gonna go through all the spoilers, we're like, oh, they reprinted Containment Priest, that's great, and kind of move on. Like, we all know what the card does. If you don't, it's a one and a white for a 2/2 human cleric with flash. If a non-token creature entered the battlefield and it wasn't cast, exile instead.
Mm-hmm.
Modern's needed this card for a long time.
Yes.
Fantastic. Glad it's here. Not really much to talk about. It kind of turns off Aether Vials, so humans have to be a little careful about having their Aether Vials in their deck. But, like, it's just good, and it was completely necessary. Like, I'm glad it's finally here.
Yeah, I think we've talked about it before when it came to like the Modern Master sets. I feel like we brought up like hoping that would show up in the set. This is finally Modern playable now. It's finally printed into the Modern metagame because in a lot of those supplemental products, it showed up originally and those were not Modern legal. However, this, like you said, is something that Modern has needed for a long time. This is a huge trump card for some really significant strategies in the game of Modern, and I think it's really important to include this in the creature decks that need these kind of specific tools to deal with those types of things. Absolutely. I wonder if this is something that is useful enough to a deck like Humans, where we might see versions of Humans that don't play Aether Vial, or that just play this and Aether Vial and don't care because
play this and Aether Vial. I can tell you from Death and Taxes, like the mana from Death and Taxes and Legacy, the mana advantage you get from Aether Vial, and especially for Humans, the mana fixing on top of that is so important that like you just play both.
Yeah, so this similarly with like Court of Calling or Collected Company, I think this belongs in those decks just because of what it does to your opponent's strategy. Even though it hoses your own in some ways, it's just necessary.
Yeah, really funny. This card got printed in the next set, but they're like, can't wait for it to come out. Agent of Treachery too good. Gotta ban it. Can't like turn off Winota by having this card exist.
Yeah,
takes too long to get to. So kind of comical. But yeah, that card was actually just a card I knew was reprinted, but it was like, okay, yeah, it's a reprint. We finally got it. We needed it for a long time. Not really much more to say. It was kind of the mentality I had about it. But I can see why you would like to make a big deal out of it.
Oh, it's a big deal. I'm very excited about this.
Yeah. I know. You are the generic knucklehead player between the two of us. So I can completely understand your excitement.
Another hyped reprint into Modern. I'm less excited about this one. I think this one is overhyped. Is Grim Tutor?
The hype for that is not necessarily Modern, but yes.
Yeah, the hype kind of stems from the fact that this was very limited in its printings prior to this, and it was almost $200 for a copy of Grim Tutor.
Correct.
So I think I'm hearing a lot of Modern players that are exciting to include this in their decks. I don't think it's very good for Modern, to be honest, but I wouldn't be surprised if it does see play. I mean, we've seen decks that take advantage of life loss, like Death Shadow. I don't know that this necessarily belongs in Death Shadow. However, it is going to be the cheapest tutor in the format, but only by one mana. It's still sorcery speed. It still costs a lot of life. I don't know.
It's not the cheapest tutor in the format, but it's the second cheapest.
What's the
and there's another tutor. So there's a couple tutors in Modern that are two mana. One of them you both have to jump through a bunch of hoops for them. And then there's another three mana tutor that's black that you also have to jump through some hoops for. So there's Mausoleum Secrets, which is an instant with Undergrowth that you have to have creatures in your graveyard to use. There's Infernal Tutor, which you have to Hellbent.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Beseech the Queen, which is black, and is dependent on the number of lands you control.
Right. That's a good point. I did not consider Mausoleum Secrets either. That's one we talked about pretty favorably when that was spoiled, and that one really is not seeing any play.
Yeah, well, I mean, it requires you to have creatures and spells, or, like, this be one of the only spells in your deck. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's some, you know, balanced stuff going on there with how do you build your deck appropriately. Grim Tutor is just exciting for, like, the straight combo decks, though, because it's just, like, I as a combo deck, if I can chain enough mana together, I'm willing to pay 3 life points to end the game.
Yeah, that's fair.
So that's why people are, like, super excited for Grim Tutor. Plus, it's just, like, an EDH staple, and they're $200. They were only printed in Starter 99. They're hard to get a hold of. Like, it's a good reprint. Price drop. The Starter 99 one will probably hold value still, but now we've got the one that's getting printed in M21 that's probably, like, you know, it's currently listed at $58 on TCG Player.
Jesus.
As of this spoiler, but realistically, it's a mythic. It's going to be a mythic in a core set, though, so it'll probably go down to like 40 is my guess.
Yeah. There you have it. The card you wanted to talk about, let's jump to that one. That was the Angelic
Ascension. Yeah, I mean, this is super interesting. Yeah, it's a Angelic Ascension. It's one and a white for an instant. Exile target creature or planeswalker. Its controller creates a 4/4 white angel token with flying.
Yeah.
So this is not a splashable card, in my opinion. And we'll talk through why I say that. Because, like, inherently you have to be able to deal with the 4/4 token in your deck to be able to play this card. So, like, your random creature deck is not using this to get out of the way. That's using Path to Exile. Most planeswalkers you can kind of ignore. But your blue-white control deck can definitely play this as, like, paths 5 and 6. Just because, like, you have Teferi, you have Jace. So, like, exiling their large threat and then removing the token is negligible with one of your planeswalkers. So, like, being able to kill planeswalkers, this gives blue-white control a main boardable out to planeswalkers. So you can play this as, like, a one-of in your deck.
Yeah.
And it deals with any planeswalker, any creature, which is, you know, which is big. I feel like it will see play. I feel like people will have to kind of engineer to understand that this is what's happening. Like, and be prepared to help deal with it. But this seems very strong. You could also just, like, let their planeswalker resolve, pass the turn to them, and make it an angel in their upkeep so they can't attack with the angels. So you, like, you deal with the planeswalker no matter what, but you bought yourself a turn of no planeswalker activation, no attack. So, yeah. Like, that's nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, this, I like what's going on here.
Yeah, we see a lot of variations on the removal spell that has some sort of drawback associated with it, but can kill any creature or deal with any creature. Exiling is relevant. Instant speed is super relevant. Dealing with a planeswalker in addition to a creature is relevant. But the drawback here is pretty significant. 4/4 will kill you. A 4/4 will kill you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not saying the drawback is negligible, but I'm saying that being able to remove planeswalkers in a deck with blue light control, where you already have Supreme Verdict and Path to Exile and things like that, to where, like, you have answers to the 4/4 between Path, Supreme Verdict, Jace, Teferi, Time Raveler, you have 4 things that can answer it. You usually play, like, 9 to 11 copies of those things combined. So, like, that is going to be a non-negligible thing to do that kind of allows you to curve, like, they do a thing on turn 3 going into your turn 3, and you can exile it, play little Teferi, bounce the token, and now you have Teferi, you've nullified their biggest threat, and you drew the card that you were going to draw anyway. So, like, you functionally were going to use the Teferi to minus anyways to just get your card. Mm-hmm. So, like, you actually got value out of it by letting your little Teferi essentially exile a planeswalker.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, man. They're getting real about dealing with planeswalkers, and I absolutely appreciate that. We've talked about how, you know, with it, so many planeswalkers being added recently, the amount of planeswalker hate and planeswalker removal has not really kept up with that. And there are a lot of cards that have been errated to damage planeswalkers, typically ones that say any target. However, there have been no cards that printed prior to Lorwyn that say anything about destroying a planeswalker. Oftentimes, yeah. Walkers like, oh my gosh, I already forgot his name. He makes
Oko. Elk.
Oko, thank you. You know exactly what I'm talking about. 3 mana. It's like, if you're for what your opponent pays for it, the amount of effort you have to put into killing such a planeswalker that's taking up 2 points at a time, it's just pretty immense. So we really need access to cards that like just straight up kill them, remove significant amounts of loyalty counters, can attack into them like Questing Beast. I'm happy we're getting more tools like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's also there's a kind of pseudo Wrath printed in the set. 1BB for Pestilent Haze. It's an uncommon. And it's a sorcery. I don't think this will necessarily see modern play, but in certain situations might be considered. It says, choose one. All creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn. It's your typical infest. Or it can remove 2 loyalty counters from each planeswalker, which is likely not enough to like wrath the planeswalkers, but having that option tacked onto a card that's already pretty playable is, it's appealing.
It's nice, yeah. It's definitely good against the war planeswalkers, because Teferi and Narset very likely are going to be on like 1 each when they do things, or 2 and 1. So like that's a reality that you get, which is very nice, but I'm not a huge fan of it, but it exists and does that thing that you just said.
Right. They're also reprinting Faith's Fetters, which has currently been modern legal, but it's not Pioneer legal.
And this will see play in Pioneer, 100%.
I think so, too. This is a card that is an older card that can deal with Planeswalkers, because it says enchant permanent. It's 3 and a white for an uncommon. When it enters battlefield, you gain 4 life. Enchanted permanent can't attack or block, and its activated abilities can't be activated unless they're mana abilities. So you can put this on a Planeswalker and deal with it in that way, too. However, the static effects of something like a Teferi Time Raveler or a Narset, Part of the Veils, still happen, yeah.
Yeah, still a thing, unfortunately.
So, long story short, pretty excited about that stuff.
Just some interesting... I'm going to talk about them all as a group here. Mm-hmm. As for reprints for Pioneer, and then a new card that might see play in those formats, and then the big dumb Planeswalker.
Yeah.
So let's talk about reprints for Pioneer here.
Okay.
I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them, although I don't think that one is a reprint that wasn't in Pioneer already. But I've got Ugin, which was already in Pioneer, but just is just access problems.
Yeah.
Hopefully going to drop the price on Ugin.
$50.
Yeah. Hopefully this will lower the price a little bit.
And those arts are very cool. I think that will encourage people that already have Ugins to go seek a pimped out version of it.
Yeah. The $50 Ugins are down to 32 on TCG Player, so that's
good. Good.
It's nice. Solemn Simulacrum, which is a card that is not currently in Pioneer.
Yeah.
But I could definitely see him playing Pioneer. It's a 4 colorless artifact, creature golem, 2/2. When it enters the battlefield, search your library for basic land, put it into play tapped, and when it dies, draw a card.
The showcase art is really cool for this one, too. The
showcase art is very nice. But I could definitely see this card seeing play in Pioneer. It's like a good way to go from 4 to 6. And on top of that, like, it's a nice little, it keeps the gears going, and it's a nice little chump blocker. Like, you're going to try and go 1, in that 2 to 4 range, and then 4 to 6, and then kind of keep on rolling. So I do like Solemn.
This one's got, like, 6 different arts to choose from. I mean, it's kind of a commander staple, so it's appropriate.
Solemn is a commander staple.
Initially, an invitational card with the likeness of the player that won the invitational. I don't remember who this was. Do you?
Oh, it was Yen something or other.
Okay. Yeah, so it's kind of funny seeing like a very human and realistic face on this robot body in the initial printing of it, but there's a printing of it from M12 that's very cool. The invention, the Kaladesh invention. There's now the showcase, and then there's the commander art being used in this set for the regular printing.
So, Jens Thorin is the player who was the invitational winner. There have been a lot of solid invitational cards. I'm not sure which one's the best.
We've got Dark Confidant. We've got Snapcaster Mage.
So there's Dark
Shadow
Confidant.
Shadow Mage Infiltrator.
Yeah, Dark Confidant, Snapcaster Mage, Solemn, Shadow Mage, Meddling Mage, and Avalanche Riders, and Sylvan Safekeeper. Those are all the ones that I'm like, man, these are all very good. Like, it's hard to say which one of these is the best. The only ones that I think were a bust are Rootwater Thief, And Void Mage Prodigy is fine, but it's not, like, amazing.
Root Water Thief was a big part of Standard, though, when it was,
in
Standard. So, I don't know.
Yeah, it was.
But yeah, they are all obviously pushed. I think when you get to design a card because you won a tournament, you really want to make sure that that card impacts the game for a long time. And they absolutely have. I think a lot of people are familiar with the name Bob when they're referring to Dark Confidant. So
yeah, Bob Maher.
Yeah,
yep.
Bob got it done. That's for sure.
He did. But yeah, Solemn Simulacrum, a good add to Pioneer. I don't know if Cultivate is Pioneer legal.
I can tell you right now. I'm going to click on it. It is not.
So, I think Cultivate is a nice one. Like, Cultivate Kodama's Reach, like, these have always been very good in Standard. So, like, all these, like, Solemn was good in Standard. Cultivate will be good in Standard. You see a green ramp core coming together here between Solemn and Cultivate. The next card I'm going to talk about, and Ugin, and then the Big Dumb 6-6. Like, we've got a lot of nice green ramp stuff going on here. But Cultivate is 2 and a green. Search your library for 2 basics. Reveal them. One on the battlefield tapped, the other in your hand. So always being able to get to 5 on turn 4 is very nice, because if you get to 3, you cultivate, puts the fourth land into play, and guarantees you the fifth land in your hand. So that's a very nice play here.
Yep.
That'll be good for Standard and Ramp, and it'll be good for Pioneer. I don't know if people will actually use it, because I mean, it's very nice to be able to go Elf, cultivate, get a splash color, untap on 5, and then you can do Solemn, go to 6, and then go to 7, make your way to Ugin and whatever other large creatures and planeswalk creatures you want to play.
There's just so much good ramp that's been printed lately that it's hard to say.
I don't know. Yeah,
there's the 3-mana elf that puts a land from the top 5 into play. I think players are particularly interested in finding non-basics.
Absolutely. I mean, maybe there's some mix of those two. Maybe this is like numbers 5 and 6, you know, stuff like that. I don't know. We'll see.
And the next one you're going to talk about is Azusa, I assume.
Absolutely. Nice little price dip on that one.
Yeah, that one was hugely overpriced, given its amount of play. And it's a big part of Amulet, in a very important part of Amulet. So I can see why people wanted it. But I think purely just the lack of printings of Azusa.
Yeah, and getting into a core set as a rare. How much was it?
I mean, I want to say it was like $40 to $50. I don't know if that's accurate.
Well, right now you can get them on TCG Player for $13.96.
Okay, yeah, good deal.
So that we are very glad that that has dropped, and that's the core set version. So if we look at all versions, they are, so the foil versions are $50. The Judge promo, Kamigawa ones are $30, and so are the. M25, what was that, Ultimate Masters or something like that? Masters 25. So they're all 30 right now. And then the one from the core set is looking to hang out at 14 based on pre-orders.
Do you think this card's going to be part of Pioneer?
It's a strong card. People will figure out something unfair to do with it.
It is a very strong card, and I think that we're almost hitting critical mass for Value Town style decks in Pioneer.
Yeah.
But the lack of fetch lands makes that difficult. You've got Fabled Passage, and you've got comes into play tapped fetches.
Yep.
But it's a little tricky.
I mean, I just think like this Encorser and stuff like that like gives you a lot. This is a nice card advantage engine with Courser. Mm-hmm. And so like, you know, you have Collected Company, you have Court of Calling, you have this Encorser. So like the question is like, what's the other color? Could it be black since we don't have Knight of the Reliquary?
Yeah.
You know, what is our Value Town creature base? But like, you could be blue and have Uro and other stuff. Like this seems like what I'm envisioning is like a blue green turbo land deck with like Nexus of Fate and Uro and this and Courser and like big, like use all that to generate momentum and ramp up to big dumb threats.
Yeah.
Or Nexus of Fate or something. Yeah.
We have Dryad. So, Dryad got printed, and Dryad isn't really seeing much play in the format yet.
That's fair. I mean, I don't know. I just feel like this is a really powerful card, and someone will figure it out.
Yeah, no doubt.
Okay. Another nice one. And this is the last one that's specific to reprints for Pioneer, which is Rewind. So 2 blue-blue instant, counter target spell, untap up to 4 lands.
Yeah.
So this is going to be very nice for your control decks. It's a functionally free counter spell. When you're not in the when you're not in the control mirror, you get to counter something, untap your lands, and counter something else, or cast your Glimmer of Genius or whatever, and draw some cards. Sphinx's Revelation. So it's a nice reprint for Standard. It's a nice reprint from Pioneer.
Yeah,
it doesn't do dog stuff nothing in Modern. So.
I've seen it played in Modern, but
occasionally
as like a one of yeah.
Yeah.
In Blue Tron, it's really kind of interesting because you can net mana from it, but what do you do with that mana on your opponent's turn is the question.
Yeah, that's the key.
Okay, so yeah, you mentioned a Big Dumb Planeswalker too. So I assume we're talking about Teferi, Master of Time, when you say that.
Yeah, big dumb Planeswalker.
There are a lot of new Planeswalkers in this set that I haven't really given the white one too much time, but
the Liliana is kind of interesting. The white one gets zero time. The Liliana is interesting, and the Chandra kind of.
It's a 5-mana red card. I don't think so.
Yeah, not. it's -9 ultimate. Yeah, we're not gonna talk about that.
But this Teferi is concerning in some ways. I think it, and I don't want to say that just because it's Teferi and Teferi's got a track record of being concerning, but this one has some really significant effects. I'm glad that the -3 is limited to you don't control. We'll put it that way. So,
yeah,
all right.
That's very good.
I'm going to read it off. It's 2 blue-blue for a 3 loyalty planeswalker. So start small. I like that. It says you may activate loyalty abilities of Teferi, Master of Time, on any player's turn anytime you cast an instant. So you can do a +1 on your turn. You can do a +1 on your opponent's turn. So effectively, it can tick up 2. The +1 is draw a card and discard a card. Innocuous, right?
Yep.
But in Modern, we know that can be abused. And in Pioneer. The -3, this is really interesting. Target creature you don't control phases out. This is historically a very difficult mechanic to understand because a creature that phases out does not leave the battlefield. It does not lose +1/+1 counters. Enchantments don't fall off of it. It just ceases to exist for a moment until it phases back in at the beginning of the next turn.
Correct.
So the fact that you can do this as an instant means you could +1 it when you play it on your turn. Then you can -3 to phase out an attacking creature on your opponent's turn, and it can still live with 1 loyalty counter on it. Oh, by the way, -10, take 2 extra turns after this one. I forgot to time
stretch.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's cool. I'm not like sky's falling on this guy yet. I think he's good. No, I think
this card is going to be very good in Standard. It's going to be kind of annoying in Pioneer. I don't know if it's better than any of the 4-mana walkers in Pioneer. This is one of those cards that I definitely have to get my hands on a try. Because like -3 to not actually kill the thing, but just temporarily remove it. So like the problem with that is if you phase it out on their turn, you can't clean it up on your turn with the Wrath of God. It just comes back. So like
if you phase their I gotcha.
Yeah, like that kind of ability looks like that screams control deck, right?
Yeah.
So like you want to protect your planeswalker by popping away one of their things, by basically hiding it in a glass bubble. Mm-hmm. But like if you do that, you can't kill it, and then you have to you still have to deal with it. So it doesn't seem like overwhelmingly powerful.
Yeah. Okay.
So.
Yeah, I think it's pretty balanced. But the whole design space where you can activate its abilities at instant speed is kind of nuts to me. You know what you could do with this guy? This guy goes in a Miracles deck, doesn't he? Instant speed, draw, Terminus off the top.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay. Well, Miracles is pretty tight at the 4-mana sorcery speed slot with all of the Jace Jace Mind Sculptors that it's got to squeeze in, but maybe room for one of these guys just to have access to that extra draw.
Maybe.
Looting is no joke, so I think that even though it doesn't net you a card when it does that, it kind of can net you a card. I mean, you're playing Snapcaster Mages, you're playing cards that care about being in the graveyard, so. Yeah, but, on the topic of blue cards that seem powerful, I want to talk about this 2-mana sorcery. Have you seen
that
this?
That was the other card I had pulled up to talk about.
Okay, yeah, this one's basically an anticipate, but it's a sorcery. It's a rare. It's called See the Truth. 1 and a blue. Look at the top 3 cards of your library. Put 1 of those cards in your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. If you cast a spell from anywhere besides your hand, instead put all three cards into your hand. So clearly this is made for Snapcaster Mage, yes?
I mean, it's not made specifically for Snapcaster Mage, but
it's
kind of busted.
What can do this in standard? Is there something that can recoup this in standard?
I mean, you have to pump it, but yeah, there is.
There's that surveil, blue surveil spell. That's still standard legal, right?
I mean, dude, you're thinking way too small, brother. So I'm going to name some red cards for you, and you're going to be upset.
Okay.
Yeah. Dreadhorde Arcanist?
Yeah, I like that.
Underworld Breach.
Ah, yes. Okay. Yeah. Song of Creation decks. What do you think? How do you get it out of your graveyard? Underworld Breach, Song of Creation. I'm wondering if there's something there. Maybe it's not necessary to even go that route. But
Brother, if you've got Song of Creation in play, I don't think you need to get this out of your graveyard. Yeah, you're already drawing two cards. You're going to get a spell that's going to draw you two more. Like, this is essentially a draw three. Like, you take the best one and then two more, or two and then the best of three. And if you don't find a spell in that, then you just kind of, like, got super unlucky. So, like, yeah, this card is very nice. I'm going to look forward to playing it in Commander. I'm going to look forward to playing it in this Canadian Highlander. I'm going to look forward to playing it in Modern. Pioneer, not so much. This card's kind of problematic.
Chandra. The 3-mana Chandra can do it too. The
one that makes the element. There we go. Lots of red cards. Lots of red cards doing our dirty work here.
So yeah, I think there might be some hope for like blue red wizards type.
Yeah, I like where your head's at.
Okay. Anyways, I think that card is very good. I think it's going to see modern play.
Sorcery
Speed version of it is just fine, and but the flashback version of it potential. Is just broken.
Yeah, it's absolutely. Good. So there's three more cards I want to talk about.
Yeah.
A reprint, a new Planeswalker, and then another new card.
Oh, for more for the reprint topic. All right, hit me.
Yeah. Rune Halo.
Yeah, Rune Halo. Okay, good. That's now Pioneer legal, or was it? Let's see.
Oh, no. It was only Modern legal.
Only Modern legal. Okay, yeah.
It was in Lorwyne, or Shadowmoor, one of the little jagged wing set. So for those of you who don't know, it's white for enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, name a card you have protection from the chosen name. So it was reprinted in Ultimate Masters, and it dropped the price down to $1, thankfully.
It was up there.
It was like a $50 card for a while because there were no printings of it. So just a Pioneer reprint and just another reprint of it. So now the price is like super tanked. I still thought it had some value. It does not, which is good.
Nah. Uh-huh. This is a card that Fran Neo Amati, who writes for our website, is historically a big fanboy of. And I think you'd be happy to see this showcase art version of it, which is only subtly different. It's the same art, but it's the extended frame to the left and the right.
Oh, cool.
Only subtly different, but the art for this card is so cool that does like really spice it up a lot.
Yep, absolutely.
But it kind of makes me consider like going back into this in Modern. This is a good way to deal with cards like Valakut, the Molten Pinnacle, because not only can you use this as removal, quote unquote, for a creature that could be damaging your life total, you can also use it for like your opponent's win condition, even if that win condition is a land that deals you damage.
Yeah, you can reset your Rune Halo by bouncing it after you deal with the problematic creature.
Yes.
With your Teferis, good old 3-mana Teferi doing good things for people.
Though it's a lot less good since you can't name zombie token, because the same decks that kill you with Valakut now also kill you with an army of zombies these days. So.
Zomborg. Yeah, not being able to name Zomborg is a little rough. Does have to name a card. But yeah,
even
always
if your
a nice
opponent uses cards to represent their tokens. Yeah, sorry, go on.
Yeah, always a nice reprint to have. It can be effective if there are cards you just literally can't deal with in standard, but I think it's just a good reprint for Pioneer. Right. So two cards left. You want the Planeswalker or the new Commander card?
Yeah, are we doing Liliana? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Okay. So I got it pulled up here. It's Liliana, Waker of the Dead. Two and a black, two and two black, so two black. For Legendary Liliana with 4 loyalty. Each player discards a card, and each opponent who can't loses 3 life. That's a +1. -3, target creature gets -X/-X till end of turn, where X is the number of cards in your graveyard. And then -7, with you get an emblem at the beginning of each combat on your turn, put target creature card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control, and it gains haste.
This immediately, I'm thinking of Aetherrack decks, and Aetherrack decks don't typically get to 4 mana, but I think if they have incentive to do so, they could. I mean, they play a lot of Ghost Quarter type of lands, so by the time they get their third land, they start to just, you know, pop off their other ones, or, you know, maybe they got the Muta Vault strategy going on too, but this not only enables the Aetherrack by discarding, but it also is like a Cursed Rack effect, or what is it, Cursed... whatever, I don't know, the enchantment that deals them 3.
Shrieking Affliction.
Shrieking Affliction, thank you. And a piece of very relevant removal for creatures.
Yeah, so I'm just... this card is good. It will certainly see Pioneer play. It might see Modern play. This thing alongside Kroxa is just like... annihilate your opponent's hand. Just like, you can go like Inquisition or Thoughtseize, depending on your format, into Kroxa... and then, like, do something on 3 and then play this on 4 in Pioneer. And, like, you should be able to hit your opponent, nug your opponent for 3, or you can kill their guy. And then, like, if you just are ticking up and your opponent hasn't died from the discard portion, like, you just get a, oh, by the way, you can have the best creature every turn.
Yeah. Yep.
So, like, this card is very strong. I am excited for it to see play. I don't like playing against cards like this because I am not a fan of having to discard my cards. But they're my cards. I want to keep them. But this card is very good, and I'm very happy that, like, I am very happy. This feels very balanced.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing I'm going to complain about existing. Well, I mean, I'll complain, but I won't be like, oh, it's so broken. I'll be like, oh, I didn't have an answer for it, and it ran away with the game, which is what every Planeswalker should do. If I can't answer your Planeswalker, it should run away with the game.
Yes. All right.
All right.
And you said a commander one.
Yeah. This is my 4 fun card.
All right.
Chromatic Orrery.
Yeah. That's
what I thought you were saying. 7 mana legendary artifact. You may spend mana as though or mana of any color. Add 5 colorless to your mana pool for a tap, and then 5 tap draw card for each color among the permanents you control. This is not getting played in any format that is real.
No, 7 mana is a big ask.
7 mana is a big ask, but, I mean, the abilities on it for Commander, 7 mana to get 5 mana back, so you'll go to 12 next turn, but you're only paying 2 mana, basically, to get this, and then it mana fixes you. The card draw is kind of bad, because you have to have a permanent in play that has all the colors, and then you're basically giving up 5 mana and paying 5 mana for it. So, like, not great on that front, but just a really strong ramp card to combine with something like Voltaic Key to just get... oodles and oodles of mana.
Yeah, there's at least one combo. There's probably more, but there's a common artifact creature that has 2 and a blue untapped target artifact. So yeah. With the two of those, that guy costs like 3 mana to play. You have infinite mana, infinite card draw. I think that's going to be a line you're going to see a lot in Commander.
I think
that's good enough for any constructed format.
You can do this sort of thing with Rings and Voltaic Key, or there's oodles of ways that you can make, like, ways to untap this card, like Dramatic Reversal, Ice Crown Scepter. Like, it's just basically, if you can untap this card a bunch, you're probably going to make infinite mana.
Yeah, cool, man. Well, we might as well, since we talked about the other two Planeswalkers, let's just talk about Basri Ket real quick. He looks like a real jock, if you ask me.
This is not a real card, but okay.
You don't like it. Okay. Well, it's a 3 mana Planeswalker, and I think it's always worth looking at 3 mana Planeswalkers.
Oh, it's 3 mana? Okay. I thought it was 4. So this is still not really a real card, but we'll talk about it.
So Basri is 1 white for a 3 loyalty Planeswalker. He is +1, put a +1/+1 counter on up to 1 target creature. It gains indestructible until end of turn. A counter is relevant, and potentially Pioneer decks that play a lot of white cards might like that sort of thing. You know what I'm talking about. The Walking Ballista combo deck.
Yeah.
-2, whenever one or more non-token creatures attack this turn, create that many 1/1 white soldier tokens that are tapped and attacking. It's pretty... ineffective, to be honest. -6, you get an emblem with, at the beginning of combat on your turn, create a 1/1 white soldier creature token, then put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. So that ultimate, not terribly exciting, but it absolutely can win the game. I think the plus one is probably better than you would think. Making a creature larger while you make your planeswalker larger and having an indestructible attacker, there's some decks that will benefit from that.
So, like, the minus two is the part that I don't like about this card. Like, I was like, plus one, solid. I really like that in a white weenie deck. You curve out, like, one drop, two drop. Like, if you just go, like, Guy, Thalia, you couldn't play Thalia. Dang. I was like, Guy, Thalia, this thing, 3-2 first striker hits you, but, like, Thalia makes it more expensive. Yeah. But, like, this card's just solid. I'm a fan of the plus one. The minus two is so underwhelming. Like, it turns all your creatures into Brimazes.
Yeah.
But, like, Brimaz was never really a card I was particularly excited about attacking. Like, I mean, it's good to attack with just because it's a giant 3/4, but, like, not at a minus two. If this is minus one, do that, I'd be in. And then minus six will win a game. You just make a soldier in Gavinny Township. Like, eventually you'll kill your opponent.
Yeah, if the minus two put human soldier tokens, I think it would be significantly better. There is not a lot of tribal support for soldiers that is really worth playing, but there's a lot for humans, and I absolutely wouldn't expect this guy to show up in a humans deck if that were the case, but I think there might be something there, at least in standard, where you're thinking, okay, well, I can get some extra value out of this minus two because my 1/1s are all doubled in power by this lord that I also have.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a soldier lord in standard, is there?
No, not in standard.
So, okay. Well, yeah, there you have it. But yeah, he's kind of interesting.
Not yet,
probably
least.
Not modern playable. Probably not pioneer playable. But the plus one counter also helps you get to your Ballista combo faster with Heliod.
It does.
I don't think you're playing this guy for that purpose. But if you want to go aggressive.
Yeah.
I don't know. All right. Anyways, I think we wrap up on that this week, but there are definitely more to come next week. I'm going to do the totals of the points from our last picks game, and I'll have that to report back on. This is kind of an exciting set, though, for a core set. It's kind of feeling like a master set a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, if they keep putting some more reprints or show off some cool new reprints, then yeah, this will be a master set.
Yeah, I don't expect too many more flashy cards. I think they had the big drop initially with like the Ugin and Azusa.
Ugin, Azusa, Grim Tutor.
Tutor, Containment Priest, that kind of stuff. But I think we'll see some good new cards being added to the formats in the coming days. I have to say I'm very afraid of what Mono Green Ramp is going to be doing in Standard after this. There's a lot of power for this. And Ugin is really the perfect top end for a Ramp deck. It does everything you want. So I think that's going to be a very obnoxious build in the modern metagame.
Hey, man, at least your Ugin's not getting stolen by Agent Treachery.
Oh, God. I almost would prefer that it could.
Yeah.
All right. Anyways, we will talk to you later. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Modern Metacall is a production of CardKnockLife.com, where you can find a selection of MTG content, both written and recorded. Looking for deck primers? We've got them. Interested in videos? Try our CKL Play series, where we take the most interesting decks appearing in published results for a spin through MTGO leagues. We've got a team of talented writers specializing in a variety of formats and archetypes. To keep up with CardKnockLife offerings, you can follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/CardKnockLifePodcast. Thanks is due to ManaTraders.com, MTGCast.com, and TheDiscard.com for their support in making this possible, and thank you for listening, commenting, sharing, and reading CardKnock Life content.